Okay, good morning. It's 9 o'clock. We'll begin the April meeting of the Gambling Control Board. We'll begin with introduction of the board staff, and I'll start to my left.
Good morning. Greg McNeil, board member, Fairfield, Maine.
Al Schofield, board member, Winthrop, Maine.
Bob Harmon, board member from Raymond.
And I'm Tim Doyle. I'm chair of the board. I'm from Turner. Barbara Dresser is on her way. She's stuck in traffic. I guess there's been a crash here in Augusta, so that's holding her up. Next, we'll have introductions of the executive director and his staff.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. With us today, we have Kathy McIntyre, our executive assistant. Mallory Riley is our licensing. Lenny Yaskwig, our auditor. Vicki Gardner, inspector supervisor. And Detective Don Armstrong, state police.
Thank you. And finally, we have our attorneys from the Attorney General's office. I'll have them introduce themselves.
Yep, Katie Johnson, Assistant Attorney General.
Ron Gay, Assistant Attorney General.
Okay. First item on the agenda this morning is the approval of the minutes from the February 27th meeting. Those were sent to the board ahead of today's meeting for a look at.
So moved.
We have a motion to accept the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Any corrections, changes? Seeing none, those in favor? That's unanimous with one abstention.
Thank you.
Next up will be the executive director's report. Mr. Champion.
Again, board members, from the operational standpoint, in February there were 21 shipments of machines and or associated equipment shipped to or from licensed facilities. On-site inspectors completed 576 observations, 31 checklists. There were 5 minor violations being monitored from our activity log. I reported 2 patron complaints and 2 dispositions of formal reports, which were sent to the members for review per statute, and there were 4 self-exclusions. In March, there were 31 shipments of machines and or associated equipment shipped to or from licensed facilities. On-site inspectors completed 607 observations, 38 checklists, 3 minor violations being monitored from our activity log, 2 patron complaints, and 2 dispositions of formal reports, which were also sent to the members per statute. And there were 15 self-exclusions in March. For the month of February 2018, we have identified an increase of 11.2% in total tax revenue for both facilities versus February 2017. Year to date, we have identified an increase of 1.8% versus last year at the same time. Oxford reported 10.3% win for the month of February from slots and 26.3% win from table games. Oxford payback percentage for February was 89.8% with an annual gross win per machine of $209.02. Hollywood reported 10.8% average win for the month of February from slots and 28.4% win from table games. Hollywood's payback percentage for February was 89.3% with an average gross win per machine of $146.20. For the month of March 2018, we have identified an increase of 12.2% in total tax revenue for both facilities versus March 2017. Year to date was also increased by 7.9% versus last year at the same time. Oxford reported 10.4% win for the month of March from slots and 25.9% win from table games. Oxford's payback percentage for March was 89.6% with an average gross win per machine of $236.48. Hollywood reported 10.8% win for the month of March from slots and 27.7% win table games. Hollywood's payback percentage for March was 89.2% with an average gross win per machine of $156.25. And that is my report.
Okay. Any questions of the executive director? Seeing none, I'd ask that Barbara join us. Just introduce yourself.
Sorry, I'm late. Barbara Dresser, board member from Salco.
That brings us to the state police report, Detective Armstrong.
Good morning. I first want to update the board on an incident I reported at the last meeting. It was a case of an underage person and the misuse of an ID. The subject actually collected jackpots by using a false ID. That report has been submitted to the Penobscot DA's office for review. Other criminal activity to report, there were 9 thefts reported. Out of those 9, 8 of them, all funds were recovered and returned to the owners, and I am currently investigating the other one. License investigations continue. 31 new licenses were investigated and submitted. Also, 48 renewal licenses were also investigated. And there are still 37 that are still pending. And calls for service from local agencies. Bangor had 18. I did reach out to Oxford, but I didn't receive anything back from them. And that's my report.
Any questions of the state police? No? Thank you. That brings us to unfinished business. First item on the unfinished business list is the RFP update.
The central monitoring system RFP has changed to a new form. The Department of Procurement came out with a new form, so we had to basically take everything from the old RFP and put it into the new. And so that's currently under review by the Department of Procurement Services. The financial RFP has changed to the new form as well, and that's under review in regards to the cost evaluation. There's been some questions about how we're going to formulate that, so I'm working with them to get that finalized. That's actually going to be done prior to the central system. The ADW rules are going through the process for final adoption, which I intend to present for final board approval at the May 15th meeting. We are on a timeline with those, so we'll be ready. Katie's been nice enough to assist me with that process, so we're going forward. As far as the ADW RFP language, I think we've reviewed that once, so I'll be ready in May as well to be able to review that RFP as well again, so we can start that RFP in motion also.
Yeah, I think the board would like to get this moving, so to the extent we can have parallel tracks, making sure we're prepared on our end to do everything we can once everything's approved and the RFP is ready to go out, all of that.
Absolutely.
Okay. And are there any questions on advanced deposit wagering or the RFPs? Just a question on the scientific games and monitoring. That's going to expire right before we can go out to bid.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that in the review of the RFP and bringing it up to date with new technology and everything, we've had to add a little or quite a bit more to it, and so it'd be virtually impossible for us to make the RFP selection by June. So we've decided to go ahead and put in for an extension for another year, which will offer us that time to finish. And I've been working with board member McNeil on that as well.
Okay, is that something that the board's going to have to approve? I think that's a board approval. I think okay. We approved the
Ron's
contract.
Nodding his head, so yeah. I don't have all the signatures, but once I have the signatures, I'll have them ready for a recommendation at the May meeting.
Right, so I think we need to work with purchases to, grease the skids and then begin negotiations to extend for a period of time. So. Gonna have to do that in May too.
Absolutely. Okay.
Any other unfinished business?
That's it.
No other questions?
The extension's at the same cost as the current this year, correct?
That's correct. Whatever's in effect. There would be no changes in the rider or anything of that nature. No. It would just be an extension.
Okay. All right, that brings us to new business. First up is a presentation regarding a license issuance to North American Video. I assume since we have some company here, there's probably representatives from North American Video, at least one. So I'll turn it over to the executive director to begin his review of the application.
Okay. With us today on behalf of NAV is Peter Rode. He's the chief financial officer. Okay. Welcome. And after I give my presentation, I'll be able to answer any questions.
Okay.
All right, first slide. All right, North American Video, NAV, was founded in 1995 and has served the gaming market for over 23 years. To date, they have installed over 500,000 channels of video, more than any other systems integrator. They hold gaming license in multiple geographical and tribal jurisdictions. Their technology expertise spans IP and analog video, access control, point of sale, license plate recognition, intrusion detection, emergency call, intercom, visitor management solutions in partnership and with certifications from some of the following companies. And we'll just put them up there. There are several more, but just wanted to give you an idea of what ones they are certified. Their corporate headquarters is located in Brick, New Jersey. They have regional headquarters in Las Vegas, Nevada, and they have support offices in California, Florida, New York, and Washington State. Some of the recent news, NAV sponsors top industry women event at a World Gaming Protection Conference in 2008. NAV hosted a Las Vegas surveillance symposium. And then NAV was named actually one of the casino security and surveillance companies to watch in 2016. A suitability investigation was completed by Detective Armstrong. He found no issues or concerns with his investigation, and he found NAV and its principal executives to be suitable for licensing. Mac Page completed a financial review of both the company and key executives, and found that they have demonstrated financial responsibility. And then our last slide shows a little bit of the organizational chart, and which officer and owner Pete Rode, the chief financial officer, is with us today. And that's my presentation.
Okay. Any questions of the executive director before we ask the company if they have anything they'd like to present?
Just a question. So NAV's applying for a license?
That is correct. They're basically a surveillance type company. They'll be doing surveillance technology, or the technology and stuff, maybe even some access control, I'm not sure. But they're requesting a license for specifically for surveillance.
So are their systems going to be implemented in Maine, in the casinos?
Have their systems been placed into Maine?
No.
No.
Well, they can't. They're not licensed, but they get a license. Are they going to? Is that the plan? Or are they going to go out and try to sell their product?
Absolutely.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Seeing none, your name again, sir? Would you come up actually to the microphone so that those listening at home, we have a large audience of home listeners.
Good morning. I'm Pete Rode. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of North American Video. I didn't bring any presentation materials, but happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I have just one question. Are you licensed in other jurisdictions?
We are.
Could you tell us roughly how many?
About 35.
Okay. All in the United States or
yes,
around the world?
All in the U.S.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Welcome to Maine. Sorry the weather's not better.
All right.
Hope you come back and visit us in August.
It'll turn soon, I'm sure.
It always has. But.
All right.
Thank you. And since this is a hearing, I would ask if anyone else from the audience would like to speak either in favor. We'll start with those speaking in favor. Seeing none, is there anybody here that wishes to offer information opposed to this? And is there anyone that would like to speak neither for nor against? Seeing none, that would close a hearing. And what we'll do is now turn over to the board to ask any final questions before entertaining a motion. Is there anyone on the board that has further questions regarding the suitability of NAV?
I think my only question is to know what Milton's recommendation is.
Okay.
My recommendation definitely is to license them. I did work with NAV in Florida, and I can personally say that they're a very respectful, hardworking company that kept me as a regulator in Florida apprised of any situations and everything, so they were extremely good company to work with.
Chair, how responsive were they if in areas of concern or things of that nature when you were working with them in Florida?
Well, when they were doing like adjustments or they had any questions about anything, when we were doing the statewide testing for a facility to open, they were right there with us making the adjustments that had to be made. A lot of times their guys were there 24/7, just like, you know, the people that actually work at the facility. So, but they did a lot of not only surveillance, but they also did some of the access control and everything, and they were in our hip pocket all the time. It was a great company to work with, really was.
And is that true throughout the other areas that you've worked in or had contact with in Vegas and other places, that the relationship is similar throughout the organization and those that they come in contact with?
Well, I never worked with NAV prior to being a regulator in Florida when I was actually in the casino industry. It was different other companies, so working with NAV the first time was when I was down in Florida as a regulator, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else from the board? Seeing nothing, at this point I would entertain a motion that NAV meets the suitability requirements as laid out by Maine law and our rules, both financially and of character and suitability.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Lauren, is the motion suitable for our purposes, or you want to be more specific? And so help us with the language out of the statute.
I'll make a suggestion, and in doing so, I think the motion's fine, but this language in the statute would be that the board issue a gambling services vendor license because the applicant meets the qualifications set out in sections 10,016 and 10,019.
That's exactly what Barbara said, right?
That was what I meant.
Yeah. Is that part of your second?
It was, yes.
Okay, so with that as a motion and a second, Kathy, you have that language or can?
I will have.
We'll have from the table.
Sorry.
That's fine. So all those in favor? That's unanimous. Thank you. Thanks for coming up. Okay. Next up would be Puma upgrades. It's a request from Hollywood Casino. They have some information, and perhaps you do as well.
Yes, I received a letter on February 6, 2018, giving me some information about their Puma system, and also that they are looking for approval to integrate part of that system into a new Salesforce system, and I read over the letter and reviewed it also with the Attorney General's, and I just felt it probably would be better for Penn National to come out up and actually have it do a presentation for us and explain a little bit more. There hasn't been any areas of concern on the surface from my perspective in this request, and so today we have Jim Balducci, who's a Deputy Chief Compliance Officer, and Shiloh Maynor, who is a business analyst with Penn National, who will be making the presentation.
Okay, and just as a reminder, this is something the board has seen, both the information that was sent to us ahead of this meeting, but also we had a short presentation, memory serves me, maybe 6 months ago, maybe it's been longer, Mr. Flores.
Yeah, that was the outbound, I think, yeah. What do they call it, the outbound?
Outbound sales.
Something
unrelated to this, or?
That I don't know, and that's what I was hoping to get that, okay. Get that information to us today.
All right, so why don't we have Penn National come up and give the board an overview of what it is that you wish to do, and
sure.
Answer any questions we may have.
Yep. Okay, again, my name is Jim Baldacci. I'm the Deputy Chief Compliance Officer for Penn National Gaming. I want to thank Chairman Doyle members of the board, Executive Director Champion, and staff for allowing us to speak before you today so that we can provide an overview of our plans to update our Puma marketing system. Director Champion said, I have Shiloh Meener here from our corporate IT department who's going to go through one of the slides we're going to show you. Also joining us is Jason Gittle, who's the Director of IT, who oversees the IT function at our Hollywood Casino Bangor property, as well as our Plainville, Massachusetts property. And also Dana Fortney, who is the Bangor Director of Finance and the Property Chief Compliance Officer. So for those of you who are not familiar with the Puma system, Puma stands for the Penn Universal Management Application. And just a little background, as I'm sure you guys all understand, each casino uses a property-based casino management system. The Bangor property uses the Valley ACSC system. These systems track and manage slot and table game activity, cage activity, certain marketing functions, credit and casino accounting tasks, and actually they do a lot more than that. They are each a distinct property-based system. Each of our casinos has one of these systems. It's kind of an isolated system. It's a silo that operates the casino, a specific casino. What the Puma system does is allows us to link all of our various casinos together for marketing purposes so that members of our Player Rewards Club, which is called Marquee Rewards, you can see up there, can be recognized and enjoy Marquee Rewards benefits seamlessly across all of our 25 casino properties throughout North America. So what are those benefits? A person who comes to a Penn casino can get our Marquee Rewards card, and then now the Puma system, it allows them to use that card at all of our casinos. So if someone at our Columbus, Ohio facility goes in and gets a Marquee Rewards card, they could actually come up here to Maine and use it at our Bangor facility. Patrons can be recognized for their tier level, even if they predominantly play at a different casino. If you see in the bottom, those are our five Marquee Rewards tier level. The Marquee Rewards being the entry level and our high-end customers being the icon level. With Puma, we are able to recognize them no matter where, which casino the Penn owns they go to. They can also use, through Puma, use comp worth earned at any Penn property, at all Penn casinos. So if someone is playing down at our Plain Ridge Park Casino in Massachusetts, they want to come up here for a week on vacation, they want to go to our Bangor facility, they would be able to use any comp worth they earned down in Massachusetts. It also allows us to honor statewide self-exclusions at all our Penn properties, and I'll get into that a little bit later. It allows us to have a more holistic picture of our customers. So as I said earlier, each casino has its independent casino management system. And so it was difficult before we had Puma for us to tell, do we have people that play at both properties? Do we have people that play up here in Maine, but they want to take one trip to Las Vegas every year? They want to go to our Prop Camp facility or our M Resort facility. So with Puma, we can now see that customer's activity across all the Penn properties. And really, it's now a kind of a requirement to compete with all the other regional gaming companies. I think most, if not all, the big gaming companies have a single card that people can use across all their properties. So Puma's not new. We began rolling it out at our various properties beginning in 2012, and it was installed at Hollywood Casino Bangor in April 2015, and has been operating up there ever since. Now, Mr. Champion mentioned Salesforce. In our letter to Mr. Champion, we indicated we plan to use Puma in conjunction with the Salesforce software program. Salesforce is a marketing program. It's an on-demand customer relationship management software suite offering applications for companies to manage their marketing and customer relationships. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of this. It's a very, this program is used all over the world in all different businesses, not just in the casinos. So what Puma will do is it will act as a gatekeeper between Salesforce and the ACSC casino management system. So this slide compares the existing Puma system with the future Puma system. As you can see, there's no changes on this side, which is the casino management systems at Bangor, the Valley's ACSC system. There's no change in the gateways through which Valley's communicates with Puma. And
customer and gaming-related offers will continue to be maintained in the Valley system. That's the free slot play offers will continue to be maintained in the Valley system. So the biggest change is customer comp worth and tier points will now be housed in Salesforce. And Salesforce is this here. This market application is now Salesforce. You can see the comp bucket and tier points currently are maintained in Puma. Now they'll be maintained in Salesforce. That's one of the major changes here, probably the major change. And again, how does this work? Players are playing in our casino. That's all being tracked by the Valley system. The Valley system will transmit some of that play information to Puma. Puma then has, our marketing department has decided based on play, so $100 coin in, for example, maybe we'll get you a dollar in comp worth. They've established that formula. Puma takes the play information and then calculates the comp worth. It also will calculate tier points based on whatever formula the marketing department has determined we want there. Puma calculates those figures and then sends it to Salesforce, and Salesforce really holds it. And so the comp worth tier points are being held in Salesforce so that we can recognize those things throughout the PENN system, all 25 casinos. Additionally, Salesforce is where we're going to generate most of our marketing. So if we send a piece of mail, marketing mail, or we send email, it'll be generated in Salesforce and it'll be sent out to our customer base. And then for the next slide, I'm gonna turn this over to Shiloh, who'll give you a little more of the, it's the most complicated document, that's why he's gotta take it, because he's the IT guy, so. Give you a little more detail.
Actually, could I go back one slide real quick? Thank you. The one thing I want to show here is part of the reason that we're doing this technical upgrade is actually for performance and scalability of our system, right? Because with everything as it currently resides in current Puma, all that is within one system, and just the demands on it as we go forward and get more customers, get more properties elsewhere, it's going to hurt performance and scalability. By breaking out the marketing functions separate from Puma and having Puma just be basically a traffic hub directing messages to appropriate systems, that's going to help our performance and scalability going forward. So we go to the next slide. So as Jim was saying, everything with the current CMS system, current gaming system, and existing S2S gateways will remain the same. All that traffic going in and out will be the same. It'll be the same messages being transmitted from the system to the new Puma. Going into a little more detail, we have structured this in a way where we have an inbound gateway, so any messages coming in, we'll go to the inbound gateway. It'll translate that message into something that we can use to perform the calculations for earning tier points and comps. Okay, so we'll translate that message, put it onto the message queue, and the message queue sees this new message and says, okay, what do I need to do with it? Do I need to use the Lattice engine to actually do the calculations? Or is it just a piece of information, a name update to a player, and I need to push that into Salesforce? Actually, one thing I do want to note here, we caught this going over through the slides again. We do have PINs basically in Salesforce on this slide. That is incorrect. PINs will still reside as they do today in the Puma DB. That's an error that we caught in reviewing this.
Yeah, PINs are what?
So when I go to somewhere and I want to use my card to turn basically my comps into a meal or something to that effect, I have to put my PIN into the system.
Just like an ATM where you got to
put your PIN. Like an ATM, yes. Good example. So those are stored encrypted today in Puma. They will store encrypted going forward in the new Puma. So what we've added to the whole Puma thing is web services. That's just a way for Puma to talk to Salesforce. So Salesforce will, if we make a name update here, it will flow into the web services, get to the message queue, and send down through S2S messages as it would today in current Puma. The publisher actually gets us information, activity logs, detailed information from Puma out to our reporting warehouse.
which is our EDW, it's an enterprise data warehouse. That's so we can actually match up our campaigns to what's actually happening to get a better effectiveness of our campaigns and see what, how they are going, progressing. And lastly, we do have a small Puma database still residing in the Puma system, and that's to house the earning rules and any kind of logic that we need to have, and also to maintain activity logs.
So, questions?
Sure.
Yes. Laws engine, explain that again.
So the laws engine, basically, that's where, so let's say we were talking about a player playing and they earn $100 coin in, and we need to convert that to, you know, a dollar worth of comps, right? So basically, the laws engine reads those rules that are basically in the Puma database and says, okay, I got this message for $100 coin in, let me do the math and calculate that so I can send that balance up to Salesforce.
So that'd be like, so the casino management system sends play data. How much did they play? What games did they play? How long? Average bet. The laws engine then calculates based on what our marketing department has determined the rewards we're going to give that patron. The laws engine makes those calculations and then sends that and says, okay, this guy just earned $5 in comp worth. It sends it to Salesforce, and Salesforce will add that to whatever existing comp worth is there. So it does the calculations on the marketing side.
And one of the good things about the system is each of these boxes are very scalable. So if we do have, if we see a lot of messages coming in from all of our properties in here, we can easily scale this up and turn on a new server and adjust for fluctuations in play data and traffic and all that very easily. Whereas today, that will, if we needed to add something to that, it would be quite an effort. Any other questions or?
Not yet.
I've got one on the previous slide. Go back to one more. Yeah, right there. Where you talk about the maintenance of customer characteristics will occur through Salesforce CRM tool, your comment, your very last comment down mm-hmm. below.
Yep.
Those characteristics, what do they consist of? You mentioned gambling time, amounts, those types of things.
So actually, the gambling time and amounts are in the Bally system. The customer characteristics will be comp worth play, where they play, how often they play.
Right.
We can
will
put
be
things
personal
in
information
there.
As well?
It,
just name, address, it, information. We do not capture social security number or any kind of identification like that.
And no banking information?
What's that? The
banking information.
No banking there. Information at all.
It could be things like, wife is Joan, and
right.
She likes to play slots while he plays table games.
Right.
Things that a casino host might put
right.
in there, because Salesforce is, developed for salesmen in all different industries. So there's a lot of ability for people to track the host, to track their players and their preferences,
smoking
their
preference,
yeah,
what restaurant
like
do they want to go to.
And my
to.
Biggest concern is just the amount of information that's out there with regards to Facebook and everything else that's going on, and how that data is being compromised. And a lot of folks, like for example, Facebook, a lot of folks using that didn't even know that their information was being captured in such a way that it could be used
yep.
by a Salesforce type of a software.
Right.
So my question is, these folks are aware of all this stuff as they come into the rewards program, the marquee program. They are aware that when they sign up for that, there's going to be a database with their information, their gambling, preferences, their wife's name, likes to do this, that, and the other thing. And sometimes that information can be used for other than what it was intended.
Yeah, so they should be aware of it, because they know, our customers are sophisticated, they know using their card that that's how they get their rewards, so they know we're tracking their play. Hosted players, and most players aren't hosted players, so you're not gonna have like the wife likes to play slots when he plays table games. But for those that are, but they know that their host knows them, has information on that. Our Salesforce system or any of these systems, they're not shared by any outside entity. It's all internal stuff. It's not like Facebook where you get on, somehow you could worm your way in. Patrons can get on our, look up their like points and balances themselves, but other people can't do it unless they can give them the password and things like that, just like a bank account.
The other question, how long do you keep your activity logs?
The activity logs, to be honest, we have them since we started this.
Okay, so it's in perpetuity?
Correct.
Okay, they don't overwrite?
Correct.
Or anything like that?
Yep, and we're pulling those, not only do we have them here, but in our current Puma database, we also pull them out to our enterprise warehouse. So we do have sort of a backup of it that way also. Besides the backups and all that.
Like it is now with this new configuration, we'll have logs of all activity, you know, what happened, when it happened, where it happened, if.
And who did it? Who logged in?
Who did it? If it's not an automatic transaction, it's something someone has to do. We have logs of all that. Password protected, segregated by property, so people assigned to our Hollywood Bangor facility will have access to do certain things for Bangor customers, but they couldn't do anything for a Columbus, Ohio customer. It would segregate their ability to just manage their own.
Unless that person went to that facility with their marquee card.
Right, well, we'd be able to see the play and stuff through there, but they wouldn't be able to, you know, offer them a free buffet, like a discretionary comp. Based on, and charge it to Columbus, for example. They have to do it their own problem.
And you mentioned password protected. Is that single factor authentication or is there a two factor job going on there? Is it just password?
It is. Actually, I'm not positive on that.
It's multi-factor authentication. Two different systems, two different sets of passwords, two different databases for those passwords to be located in. So they'll need to be able to log into the local gaming system as well as the Puma system.
Okay.
The two different authentications.
Perfect. Thank you.
That's all. Any other questions on this?
I'm good.
Okay. Next slide. So this is just, we've kind of talked about this before, but this is just some specific transactions, how they'll work. New customer comes in, has never been to one of our properties, say I'd like a card. The clerk at our club desk or a cage, wherever they're getting their card, is going to log into Salesforce. They're going to enter the patron information, typically name, address, date of birth, phone number, email, because we do, like most companies, we do a lot of our marketing by email now. Enter that information. We do check IDs when everyone gets a card, so it can't be done remotely. It's got to be done in person at one of our facilities. That information is entered. It goes through Puma. Puma then sends it to the casino management system. So now we have, that patron has information in the casino management system as well as in Salesforce. Salesforce, through this whole process, they've got an account number. That account number then recognizable throughout the Penn system. So again, we recognize it wherever they go. So really, in this case, that's really, the Salesforce is a data entry tool. It's a portal to enter data, which goes, it's kept in Salesforce, but also goes to the casino management system. The other thing I talked about earlier is the add, remove, adapt. The term you guys use is self-exclusion program. That DAP stands for disassociated persons, which is a Missouri term. So someone goes, enrolls in the self-exclusion program. Clerk who gets those from the state will go into Salesforce, see if the patron already has an account. If they do, they will append that account and put exclusion flags. Typically, we zero out their comp worth, we zero out tier points. If they have credit lines, we cancel those credit lines. That person will do that. It'll travel through Puma, and that goes to all of our casino management systems. So if someone enters the main self-exclusion program, and they go to our St. Louis property, and say they win a jackpot, even if they're not using their card. They win a jackpot, we have to look them up. Our protocol is to look them up into our system. We'll see that they're excluded, and we'll tell them, I'm sorry, you have to leave now. If they try to cash a check, for another example, we'd say, sorry, I can't cash your check, and you have to leave. And if it happens in state, so if it's a main exclusion, I don't know the exact rule here, but many of our states, if they, for example, won a jackpot, we would actually confiscate those funds. If a main person goes out of state and they haven't won a jackpot, we wouldn't confiscate those funds, but we'd tell them they have to.
That's what was running through my head. Who is the legal authority behind that? You know, in Maine, we have the right to seize the jackpot. You would be enforcing that as a facility, as an entity.
So we'll know that if you go to our Bangor facility, we'll know you're a Maine self-exclusion, and we will do whatever the law says, which is, in most jurisdictions, we would confiscate those funds and take the person out of the facility. A couple of our jurisdictions, we actually have to call the police and get them arrested. I'm not sure good idea, but we are forced to do that in some jurisdictions. But again, if this main person went to St. Louis and they won a jackpot for legal reasons, we would not confiscate that jackpot. We'd say, hey, now if they kept doing it, we would, at a certain point, we'd say, sorry, I'm not paying you this, you can sue us if you want. My tippy doesn't happen. So that's the self-exclusion part of it. Next slide, please. So we talked about this comp and cheering. Well, again, players playing in here, the casino management system is the one that tracks, you know, what game, how much coin in. That then sends signals to Puma. Puma does the calculation through that laws engine that we referred to and says, okay, he's $100 coin in, that gives him $1 in comp worth. It then sends that $1 to Salesforce. Salesforce then, they had $10 comp worth, will add $1 to it. So they got 11. And then, so the reverse of that is now they want to use their comp worth. They would go to our point of sale system, let's say at the Epic Buffet. They would swipe their card at the Epic Buffet. It would then, let's say the bill's going to be $50. It would send a message to Puma, say, hey, I got a comp here for 50. Does this person have it? Puma sends it to Salesforce. Salesforce says, yes, they have it. Deducts 50 from that comp balance. Sends back an approval signal, says, go ahead and make the comp. Or if they didn't have it, it would send a message back saying, I'm sorry, they don't have $50. And then at that point, we would, you know, tell them, well, you got 20, you know, you can pay 30 if you want, or, you know, you want to talk to a host or someone in marketing, maybe they can do something for you. So, and that's really it. So it's not a huge difference from what we are currently doing. The main change is the more widespread use of Salesforce and the keeping of the tier point and comp balance within Salesforce. That allows scalability that Shiloh referred to, much better than the Puma system. It allows Puma to be primarily concerned with traffic cop and calculating benefits. I do want to know that while Salesforce keeps comp worth balances, this does not include free slot play. So most of our properties offer free slot play. I think we do here at Bangor too. That is still kept at the casino management system, so that is not kept in Salesforce. And with that, I'll take any other questions you have.
I have a couple, but before I ask them, anybody on the board? Seeing none right now. I want to make sure that none of this interferes with Scientific Games' ability to monitor the play. That's completely standalone.
That's the central server you guys see out
there.
And we have it in a couple other jurisdictions also.
Yep.
There should be no interaction.
Different communication ports within the slot machine, different paths.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to hear that.
Yes, but that's,
and the other thing I'd like to make sure, when we talked about Salesforce, we have advertising rules that require certain information. Just because advertising and marketing is now being done outside of Maine, I want to make sure that Maine standards for those being advertised in Maine are upheld.
Yeah, this shouldn't change that at all. You know, whatever the Maine property wants to do, they will go through the normal protocols. Most of our marketing is still kind of generated at the property level. There's consultation with corporate. If you were to do some global corporate campaign, the way it works is the corporate marketing department sends this information to all our properties and says, hey, you know, if you need approvals or you just have to submit it, please do so. And that protocol has been operating, I know, for some time now. Some jurisdictions, they don't really touch marketing that much. Other ones require approval of marketing or advertising. And some say, we don't approve it, but we need to see it before you start it.
Right. Maine has a tagline, for example, that has to be on all advertising. So just want to make sure that what we're seeing here and what we anticipate doing doesn't conflict anywhere with our rules or statutes. I don't see that.
The local marketing department will still be generating all of the print and email creative, I guess you can say, that they can ensure that message is displayed on every document.
And none of this provides credit.
No, none of this has credit in it. Credit is still maintained in the casino management system, right? So each individual property casino management system is where the credit is established. It does not, I don't think, if you have credit in Bangor, you could go to Columbus and automatically get credit. You would have to go through whatever credit approval process they have to get credit. So it doesn't.
It's more for the ancillary amenities is really what the comps.
Comps and tier points and again, currently Freeze Lab Place is housed here at the CMS, and that may change in the future, and if that does, we let each commission and board know beforehand, see if they had any concerns.
Any other questions of the board? Our IT guy got our IT issues covered, which is great. Okay, thank you very much for coming up. Is this something, Milt, you're looking for an approval from the board, or just an awareness? I'm not sure that this requires our approval.
Yeah, because receiving the letter, it said in early 2012, so I didn't know, and I tried to go backwards to see if there was any other prior presentations in 2012 going to the board, and so I just felt it better because this was a system that I read from the letter that I received, that they have been using this since 2012.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be better if they were integrating another portion, like the Salesforce, into their system. That would be a good idea to come forward and get your approval or your response to it.
Yeah. No, we appreciate the information, but I'm not sure it requires board approval. Any thoughts? It's not a licensed.
This whole request actually raised some interesting questions that the board doesn't need to deal with, but something that we need to do further evaluation on. Certainly, and let me just tell you what that is, and that, because it goes to your question, what exactly would the board have to do? And it's interesting because if Puma was like NAV, then what the board would have to do is approve essentially a gambling services type of vendor, and it would be, at that point, it would be a modification to its, what you had approved for it to do. But in this case, it's not a third party, so therefore there's nothing required. But it does raise interesting questions about licensing of individuals related to this activity. So for example, for NAV, we did an investigation of the key people involved in that, and it's not clear to me that we touch that here with the internal type of processes. And so that's a question that, you know, Mr. Champion and I have identified a potential seams, and that's something that we may need to bring back to the board, probably not, but that we are looking at. So to answer your question, it's not obvious to me what the board would have to do today. I don't think you need to do anything.
Yeah, I don't think so either. If they were seeking to become a vendor, which they're not, you know, the issue would be, is that in conflict at all with our statute? Can you be a vendor in a, you know, a casino? In this case, I don't see any conflict, and I don't think the board needs to take any action. I think being aware of this is helpful, and certainly your coming up to present this is very helpful, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, and we sent the letter, a similar letter, sent the main to all our jurisdictions.
Yep.
A couple of them asked some follow-up questions. Some just said, yes, it's a marketing system. We don't regulate it. You're fine. We're still, we did a phone conference with the Missouri Gaming Commission because they had some questions, and they had some written questions. We provided those.
Yep.
They've indicated they're going to give us the go-ahead. It didn't go through the board process, just the staff.
Yep.
They'll give us the go-ahead, they said, in about a week. And we're the only one that hasn't really given us a final say as to whether they have any issues with it is Illinois. And we were scheduled to go up there, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago. But the executive director there left his position, so that got delayed. So pretty much every jurisdiction has said it's fine to move forward.
Yeah.
And some had some follow-up, some had no questions at all.
All right. I think unless somebody on the board feels differently, our response is going to be thank you for the information. I don't think it requires any further board action, and go ahead and keep going.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. Okay. And final area of new business?
Yeah, I think we're into the financial reporting. You're talking about a 1 week delay because of communication issues between the board, staff, our auditor, and the facilities?
Yes, actually, since the first of the year, the facilities have been reconciling with the central monitoring system as required by rule. K The communication between the facilities and central system has been increased due to the following of that rule. The Gambling Control Unit audits their results, obviously. As a result of these audits, it was determined that it is, or has been, impossible to settle to the penny. In the last 3.5 months, the facilities have been paying a little over rather than being short. This results in weekly adjustments. After consultation with both facilities, Scientific Games, and the Department of Administrative and Financial Services, I'm requesting approval for a 1 week delay in reporting and calculating collected funds and the distribution beginning June 6, 2018, with a payment due and distributed on the 13th. This will give the central system time to catch up with machines not communicating or the timing of reports to catch up as well. This will be a one-time delay, and going forward, we will still report and distribute on a weekly basis as outlined by rule. The schedule will be the following. The current weekend will close out on a Tuesday night or Wednesday morning for the previous week, Wednesday through Tuesday. The weekly report shall be generated for that week on that Tuesday night or Wednesday morning or the preset time of the closing of that day. Differences in the reporting of each machine, promos, claimed and unclaimed tickets, etc., will be reconciled by Friday at 3 p.m., and the unit shall receive the signed form MGCB 2300 from each facility, signifying that, in conjunction with Scientific Games, these are the final figures and total payments to be made by wire transfer on each Tuesday by 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. The distribution figures shall then be submitted by the unit to the Department of Administrative and Financial Services, DAFS, by the close of business on Tuesday. DAFS will then distribute the funds as appropriate on either Tuesday afternoon or at the latest Wednesday morning. Then, of course, the next week begins. Note that Mondays have been moved from this equation as most holidays seem to land on those days. Okay, so what we're asking for basically is just the ability to delay it one time, and then we'll continue the weekly distribution thereafter, but it gives us time to catch up. We've had an issue where Scientific Games would pull the report from one of the facilities, and the facilities would pull the report from their facility, but they weren't able to do it at the same time. They got it real, real close. But even with that time difference, it made for a lot of adjustments in the system. The other reason was if a machine is not communicating necessarily on a Tuesday night going into Wednesday, this would give us time for the next 24 to 48 hours for that machine through their communication to kind of play catch up and get that data from the slot machine to the central system. So they've pretty much guaranteed me by Friday that they can zero out and be more close. The unfortunate thing is, like I said, we've had to make adjustments up to this point, $200-$300 adjustments, because obviously the facilities don't want to underpay, they'd rather overpay. And so we're having to do this constant follow-up and constant adjustments, and then we have to follow up on those and so forth. So it's just made for a lot of unnecessary extra work. And so that's our request.
So when you say a one-time delay of distribution, is it going? Everyone's going to be off a week from then on, or the first one's off in the reporting, and then every other one's going to be on time? So the end user, the city of Bangor, the municipality of Oxford, you know, all the other various people in the cascade, they're going to see an interruption of one payment by a few days, and then no other interruption.
Yes, actually what I'll do is I'll put out a letter, that's why I pushed it off until June, is I'm going to actually put out a letter stating that the June 6th payment will actually be made on the 13th for the 6th, for the week ending the 6th, and then each week thereafter, they'll continue to get a payment every week, but it'll be for the previous week. So it's a delay of week one time, and then they start. That they get their payments every week, but it's going to not be for that Wednesday. It's going to be for the previous Wednesday.
Is this going to impact anybody's fiscal year? So we're delaying a payment in June of 2018 for a fiscal year starting July 1st, for example, are we going to, so they'll receive one less payment in that fiscal year?
Could be. I'd have to check on that. We didn't discuss that at the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah. My concern is, we don't hear a lot from the people in the Cascade. We take one payment away from them for a fiscal year, and we're going to hear from them. I'd like not to hear from them.
Right. I'll check on that.
Any other questions from the board?
I guess just a question. So, I mean, the problem that you're trying to address and take care of, it seems like it happens all the time. Roll has to roll. So I don't understand why a one-time delay corrects that. What about going forward? Aren't you still going to have the same delays and things of that nature?
No, because what it's doing is allowing the machines to catch up to the system. If they have, if they're not communicating to the system, may require a RAM clear, may require a reboot, because after all slot machines are not
compatible. So won't they get behind some down the road?
No, not necessarily, because they could, at the end, like on a Wednesday, we could literally come up with thousands of unaccounted funds, okay? And that's because this machine in this particular location is not communicating to the central system. And so when that's identified, they have the ability in the next 24 to 48 hours to do what is necessary in order for that data that's being held in the slot machine to be transferred to the central system. So what they're saying is, rather than trying to audit that function or assume or wash or any of those financial terms, they just said that we would be better to be able to zero out if we had 24 or 48 hours after the fact.
Oh, okay, I'm not sure I understand that, but that's fine. But let me get back to the fiscal issue of, you're going to delay the payment to the Cascade for a week. But that delayed payment, when it gets made, you're also getting a current payment. So there won't be a delay in the month of June. They'll still get their four payments, right?
Well, you would, on the 13th for the 6th, on the, help me, 21st to the 13th, you know, so I'd really have to look at it to see.
So it really is being delayed all the way out through.
Yes.
You know, they're going to lose a week payment. Continuously, always going to be behind. They'll never get caught up with that 1 week payment.
You're correct.
Okay.
My mode of thinking is it would be delayed 1 week, and then going forward, they will continue to get a weekly payment.
Okay.
But you're exactly right. It will still be for the previous week.
Sounds like state government 15 years ago. I'm not interested in going back to that. I'm okay with figuring this out. I mean, this isn't rocket science. We got to figure a way that nobody loses a payment, even if we have to make two payments the first time. You know, there's a way. We got to make sure everyone's whole, and that delaying a week does nothing but allow us to just do that audit over a couple of days and get caught up.
Right.
So if we can do that, come back to us with a solution in May. We have some really, really smart financial people in the department. Work with them, because this is really, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars over the whole Cascade. So we'd hear about that pretty soon. I don't get a lot of phone calls at home. That might generate one of them.
We'll
try it. Okay. It may be enough time to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
Any other questions before we? Okay. Seeing none. All set under new business?
That's it. Thank you.
Next up would be public comment. And just for those here in the audience, our intent is to have an executive session afterwards to receive some advice from our attorney, and we'll make a motion at the end of all the public proceeding. For those who want to hang around, you're certainly welcome to hang around, but what we're going to do is close the door and hold the session here. So if you want to wait and then come back and listen to us adjourn, you can do that, but I can assure you there'll be no decisions made after the executive session. We'll just simply announce what time we adjourn and that we made no decisions. So, having said that, is there anyone else that would like to address the board? Seeing none, our next meeting date will be May 15th, 2018. That'll be here in this room, beginning at 9 o'clock. If there's nothing else from the board, I've asked if Greg would make a motion to go into executive session. We'll then break for a couple of minutes to just let people leave, and we'll come back and begin the executive session immediately.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to enter into executive session. This motion is pursuant to Title I, Section 405-6E. I move that we enter into executive session to receive advice from our attorney concerning the legal rights and duties of our agency.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, it's 10 o'clock. All those in favor of going into executive session? That's unanimous. So we'll go into executive session. We'll come back when we're done, make a motion publicly to adjourn. Shut the recording system off for now.